Item number 14 from Corporation Counsel, submitting an informational monthly report providing an update on the status of pending litigation. This item will also be considered by the Committee on Finance, Personnel, and Audit. It is informational only and thus otherwise directed by the committee.
Attorney Grady.
Mr. Chairman, committee, I don't have a lot to tell you, so I think I can be fairly brief. The notice for the agenda and the list that you have, the memo that you have, indicates that we are prepared to talk to you about any litigation in the county, not just what's on this list, because what's on this list are just cases that we have chosen as things we believe you have the most interest in. But in terms of the list here, there's really not much to report except a couple minor things. If we skip to item number 5, which is the pension multiplier lawsuit, that case has been transferred from District 1 Court of Appeals to the District 4 Court of Appeals by the Court of Appeals. District 4 is the Madison and southwestern part of the state. Those judges recently let us know that they're not going to have oral argument on the case and it's going to be submitted purely on briefs. So that normally means, normally being the key qualifier, that you will receive a decision within several months. So it's a guess, but we may get a decision within several months. Item number 9 is the Christensen case. I do want to tell you what you may have read in the newspaper, that on Tuesday, Judge Brash issued a decision. Let me back up. The Christensen case has been around for more than 10 years and contains, for background for the new supervisors, two primary provisions. It goes back to 2001, I believe. One related to population caps on the in-custody jail and house of correction, and then the other part relates to medical care at the jail. And it has a lot of, it's a thick document with a lot of provisions on what has to be provided and what has to be done. We had a lot of litigation in the middle of the prior decade over the population cap issue and booking cap issues. That portion has been resolved. The decree is still in place, but there have been no issues over that for many, many years. The medical care was going relatively well for most of the time of the decree until more recently, where we've had a loss of medical director due to resignations or deaths, and have had trouble over the last several years maintaining medical supervising professionals at the jail and the House of Correction. Last summer, the sheriff, through a private attorney, Mr. Whitcomb, filed a motion in the Christensen case asking the court to declare that the sheriff had the constitutional unilateral authority to hire a private entity, that is Armor Healthcare, to provide healthcare in the jail. He had proposed at that time, I believe, a 2-year contract which would have privatized the entire healthcare operation. The court, Judge Brash, recently ruled that the sheriff did not have that constitutional authority, that although he does have the statutory obligation for responsibility for medical care in the jail, the county still has the authority to make the decisions on the financing and the structure, the provision of the health care in a bigger picture sense. That was kind of where the matter rested until about a week or 2 weeks ago, when we were informed, and then subsequently the court was informed, that the only physical medical doctor at the two facilities was resigning effective tomorrow. And that as of that resignation, there would be no medical doctor to supervise the nurse practitioners, no medical doctor to prescribe controlled substances that are regulated by the DEA, and we would be without the ability to really provide appropriate medical care to the inmates. And so at that point, the sheriff did approach the court again and request that the court order the Armor contract to be put in place. In the meantime, in the interim, there have been multiple efforts through the Department of Human Resources to locate other alternatives. They have looked through various agencies, private agencies, search firms, whatever you want to call them. They have also approached the Medical College of Wisconsin, as the judge had suggested. They also approached another private entity. I don't remember what it stands for. CHC is the name, who provides medical care in other jails in Wisconsin. Some jails, I believe. And all of those failed primarily because they couldn't ratchet up and get enough information quickly enough to respond to the request. They just couldn't get their feet under them fast enough. And so the court was left with a situation. In response to the search efforts that the county had made, Armor did change its proposal from the original two-year proposal. And the proposal, the most recent proposal, and the one the court ordered Tuesday, was a one-year contract which provides for the filling of all the positions that the county hasn't filled. So they will fill the top administrative positions, medical positions, and all of the vacant nursing, et cetera, positions that are required under the consent decree that are not currently filled by county employees. That's approximately 45 positions. I don't have the exact number, but in that vicinity. The county employees who are there will stay there. The contract provides that over time, as county employees leave, they will be filled with Armor employees. But again, this is a one-year contract. It's an emergency situation because as of Saturday, we need something. And so the court was dealing with the emergency, having no other alternative on the table that he could use. And so the court said, I am ordering the county, in order to comply with the consent decree, to enter into the contract with Armor. The contract does have an out clause, a 30-day out clause. So if the county board or somebody comes up with a better solution, in the meantime, we obviously can do that. I think what I believe is the expectation from policymakers is that this will be the immediate short term, whether that's 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or 12 months solution, to allow us the time to do an RFP again, which the sheriff has done before, but now the county would be doing it, I think, instead of the sheriff, to see if we can get some individuals proposed, some competition in this area, for lack of a better word. Also, obviously, if the county comes up with a different solution, whether it's the county exec, county board, together comes up with a different solution, then that option's always on the table as well. So there is this order by the court is not intended to be a permanent long-range solution. It is intended to deal with the emergency situation. We don't have a lot of negotiating power at this point. We have to enter into the contract. We have a meeting this afternoon to meet with Armor to talk about the implementation, the transition with the sheriff's office and the new superintendent. And hopefully the two offices will work to cooperate on inmate medical care as they did before 2009. And we'll move forward with the contract as ordered by the court in the short run.
Okay, I see Supervisor Schmidt and then Supervisor Weishan.
Yes, I was. We've been through this a long time. The Christensen lawsuit numbers in the jail, and the big thing was the three major positions: the head psychiatrist, the head administrator, the head physician. The three major ones that we haven't been in compliance with for a long, long time. And the sheriff, the background was the sheriff, you know, brought Armor to us a couple of years ago already started, right? Mm-hmm. We've been through this a long time. One of the major stumbling blocks here is that our own employees, especially the nurses, who we've had a very good relationship with contractually and in bargaining and the terrific work they do. I mean, this is tough duty and behavioral health in the jail for the nurses. And I think a major stumbling block, I think, if I'm wrong, someone else in the committee can jump in, but I think we were almost pretty universal in saying that, you know, we're really concerned about our employees and what's going to happen and, you know, who would you bring in. At kind of the 11th hour, this was our last meeting, Armor came in and said that, well, we're going to keep all the nurses. I think this was something that gave solace or a lot of, you know, hope that this would work out maybe then, because we did throw to human resources to try to fill these positions too. The sheriff's department kept coming back to us month after month and saying we can't find anybody to fill these positions. And then there was the medical examiner there, and he had to have an okay. And so it's a complicated process. But the end result is we just weren't able to fill these positions, and this is a serious fault in the Christensen decree that we cannot ignore, and we kept trying to wade through and try some time here. And then we let human resources come in. They tried to find. We had medical college as a whole, fully the other one, and no one was able to fulfill and guarantee us that we'd be able to fill all these positions. So now with the court decision, I don't think we obviously have any choice, but Armor is able to fill those positions that we haven't been able to fill that are absolutely necessary, so we won't, we've been dodging this lawsuit for a long time. So I guess that's the summary where we are, and I don't see us changing anything in the short run, but maybe, you know, we talked about procurement before and other sources, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of play out there in able to fill these very important positions. These, again, we saw with the medical examiner today that, you know, while you look at, you know, what the head psychiatrist makes, you know, substantial six figures, but comparative to what it is, and other, like our nurses is a good example too, you know, what they make and what they put in, the time they put in, and they can make much more and have better hours, most of them in the private hospitals, of course. So these are positions we see a lot in county government that, you know, people got to be dedicated to do these things. I think that's part of the difficulty in fulfilling those other positions.
Attorney Green, do you want to weigh in before I go to Supervisor Weishaupt?
Just a quick comment. To the extent that the long-term solution becomes a at least partially private solution, we have, through this process, learned about there's a handful of private companies that do this across the country for other people, for other locations. And so we have a list of people we can look at besides just Armour, for example. Secondly, the other thing that was creating a problem here, to be blunt about it, was the fight over the House of Correction, the legal fight.
Yeah.
And CHC in particular said they were concerned about coming in given the environment that was occurring. Given that that has been legally settled, at least at the circuit court level, I think that that may stabilize and may allow more people to become interested in participating in the future.
Thank you. Supervisor Weishaupt.
Thank you, and I think that that's an important thing because what hasn't been covered over the last 10 years is that, I should say since the sheriff took over the House of Correction, is how he has poisoned the environment out there. Everybody keeps on claiming that he cleaned up something, and I've been arguing just the opposite. He's made, you know, some changes, but not necessarily for the better, and he has put us in a very terrible negotiating position. In fact, Armour, when they came here and the committee asked about, you know, would you do this and would you do that, they said absolutely not. And then it wasn't until they were standing in front of a judge and that our human resources department had brought in some competition, did they all of a sudden miraculously decide that they could, you know, make some changes and things like that. So I just, you know, this is a I guess a bad situation out of an ugly situation. It's not what we would have preferred, and we were put here only because of the antics of the sheriff. But I think now that since it is only a one-year contract and that now we have a new superintendent and that we have our human resources has actually only been involved in the recruitment process, I would say less than a year, around 6 months or so, that maybe we will get some better results because I never thought that the sheriff's department was really making any kind of real effort to fill those medical positions. So too bad the General Assembly isn't here recording. You know, maybe Schultz is in his office listening or something, but the big thing is that the sheriff created this toxic environment. They came in with this private entity that didn't want to bargain. Only when it came to the last minute did they even make some accommodations. And yeah, they ended up with a multi-million-dollar contract at the expense of the taxpayers of Milwaukee County when we could have solved this problem years ago.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Broderick.
Just in a related question, I guess for those who have been involved, Corp Counsel maybe will answer the question, and it's one that would require an opinion, I suppose, but have we been realistic in our assessment of the market value of these services in terms of what we're offering? If we upped it substantially to somewhere nearer market value, would we be likely to attract a larger pool of candidates?
Mr. Chairman, I have to say I'm probably the wrong person to ask. All I can say is that Inspector Schmidt has said in the past that he went to anyone with an open checkbook willing to spend whatever was required. I don't really personally know the answer to that question. So, I have to defer that to...
Well, perhaps that's something that that we need to more closely examine, because what we were offered by the sheriff and the insurances we were giving are, given are something that I'm reluctant to buy into, given the source. So, you know, an independent look at offered compensation may be something that we should revisit.
Anybody else? Attorney Grady, I know that you were maybe halfway through. If you wanted,
yeah, I'm done on Christensen unless there's other questions. Okay. Just to skip, just to be official about this, item 15 on the list is the House of Correction lawsuit. You're all aware of the result. You've been given the decision. The sheriff has filed an appeal. He has cooperated to date with the transition, but he has not withdrawn his appeal either, so, okay. So the appeal is pending. I think in terms
I'm sorry,
of...
has appeal officially been done?
It's officially been filed, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
In terms of the list, that's all I have. I just had really two other things I wanted to comment on very briefly. One is a lawsuit, just to let you know, we don't do this very often, but I want to crow a little bit for our office, although it may or may not make some of you happy. Mr. Williams from our office represented the sheriff in a lawsuit in federal court brought by former Sergeant Graber. And it was a lawsuit alleging that the sheriff had violated his constitutional free speech and association rights, arising out of a meeting that the two of them had with others present. They had a trial to the court. It was not a jury trial, but it was to the Judge Callahan in federal court. And then that trial was a couple months ago. We received a decision this week that found no liability on the sheriff, or obviously by inference on the county, because anything against the sheriff is against the county. And so it was a victory for the county and the sheriff, and for Mr. Williams personally. So I just wanted to let you know that it's a nice decision. It was a case that was not an open and shut case by any means, and so it was a nice decision for us. And then last, it's not on the list because it just came in this week. You're probably aware of the fact that the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberties has filed an open meetings lawsuit against the county board. We just received it yesterday. Ms. Walker and I have been discussing it. I believe that our office is probably going to handle that and represent the county on it. But if you have questions about it, we can either deal with them at a future meeting or we can do it in closed session.
Very good. Anybody else? Supervisor Weishan.
Number seven, with now that you know, the House of Correction and everything, how that will affect correction officers.
Chairman, this, as you can tell, was filed, a lawsuit filed by the District Council 48 against the county and the sheriff because they alleged that the sheriff was violating the seniority rights of individuals to select vacation. This is correction officers we're talking about, not deputies, and that he was violating their transfer rights. That lawsuit is still pending. If to the extent there were violations, and I'm not admitting that there were, superintendent obviously may or may not take a different position, but the lawsuit will still be there unless the union decides to withdraw it for that period of time that the sheriff was in control. This lawsuit is being handled by outside counsel through the mutual.
Well, my question is, what is there some kind of, I guess, like mediation or talks that we could sit down and discuss the issue? Now that, like I said, there is a new superintendent and we could address those issues without, you know, the time and effort that it takes to go through a lawsuit?
The answer is you can always talk. I can certainly pass that on to the insurance company and to our outside counsel. The case has really not moved very far so far. It's been in sort of preliminary skirmishing, for lack of a better word. The union had sought a temporary injunction. There was a hearing, and that temporary injunction was denied. And that's all that's really happened in the case so far. But I can certainly pass the
Well, right. I would hope that, I don't know if you need direction from the committee or who, but like I said, now that we can say that at least we turned one page at the House of Correction, and that maybe we could, you know, like I said, engage in some conversations that would help alleviate whatever issues brought up the lawsuit.
again, I'll discuss it with our outside counsel and see what they're.
Okay. And then just on a other issue, we had a couple that on the appeals, both the sick leave and the first one, that would be 14 and 4. Could you tell us where they are on the appeals court? Because there was, from my point, there was a lot of us who felt, you know, we didn't do the appeal and it was more of a, I guess, timing issue to a certain extent that went forward and a little bit of parliamentary maneuvering on the county board at the time to actually authorize those appeals.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. The other ones on this list that are on appeal is number 3, which is the lawsuit related to the retirement health plan and co-pays and deductibles in the health plan. That case was actually in federal court. The county won that case in the federal district court here in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. The plaintiffs have appealed to the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, which covers Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois. And it's been briefed in the Court of Appeals. They've had oral argument in the Court of Appeals, so we'll get a decision from the Seventh Circuit on that. Yeah, you know, anywhere from a couple months to a year. So, number 4 is the Medicare Part B lawsuit. That lawsuit brought by the Nurses Union and the Attorneys Union related to the elimination of reimbursement of the Medicare premium for Medicare Part B as part of the health plan. We lost that lawsuit in the Circuit Court of Milwaukee County, and it is on appeal to the Court of Appeals of Wisconsin. Briefing has been completed, and that's where it sits. So it's hard to predict when a decision on that will come out. It could be, you know, tomorrow. It could be a year from now. It's really completely up to the court. And the same situation exists for number 14. We lost that case. What you have there is the first case listed as Pasco versus Milwaukee County. That is the case that I'm primarily talking about. We lost it in circuit court. We've appealed. Briefing's been done, and it's sitting in the Court of Appeals waiting for a decision. The other cases listed there all either were consolidated with Pasco or are on hold waiting for the result of Pasco. Mm-hmm. And so you know, we should be getting decisions in these cases, I would hope, during this calendar year. And then decisions will have to be made, obviously, if they're against us, on whether we appeal to the next levels in the respective cases, generally speaking, via the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Sure. To that if a decision doesn't go our way in the appeals court, that it will take an action on the county board to appeal it again to the Supreme Court? Will it be automatically?
What I would recommend, because there's a short time frame to file with the Wisconsin Supreme Court, 30 days essentially after the Court of Appeals, is that if we get an adverse decision, that we call, if we need to, we call a special meeting of this committee. Otherwise, what we would probably do is default to the ordinance provision, which allows our office to file the appeal to preserve your rights, and then you could always withdraw it if that's what the board wanted to do. But we certainly are going to preserve your right to appeal until you have a chance to make the decision. Let's put it that way. So either you will have a special meeting or we'll file it, and then you can withdraw it if that's what you want to do.
Well, just for the committee and stuff, at least my own personal preference is that we would do everything we could to have a special meeting. I think after two strikes and a lot of this other stuff, that this just, we're looking, you know, for some slanted Supreme Court decision that may not be in the best interest of anybody. So I would think if you lose at the circuit court and the appeals court, that we, because this is the catch that we got in last time, and then like I said, then there's the parliamentary kind of machinations of the county board that then they automatically file these appeals, and then nobody wants to have the guts to stand up in front of the media, you know, and you know, close the door kind of type stuff. So we end up going forward with these appeals, even though we probably shouldn't. So at least the Corp Counsel's office, I would suggest that it at least get the committee's opinion before they go forward.
Supervisor Schmidt.
Yes, thank you. I just would like to comment on that. And I understand the supervisor's concern, and we do have a concern, you know, to if we don't think we have a solid case to keep going, because it's certainly expensive to do. However, what we do see in some of these other cases, for example, you know, the retiree health and stuff that we think we have a very good case on, the other side seems to always keep their appeals going also. And so it's a two-way street, and I think we have to make sure we protect ourselves, because we're talking about substantial monies. And I don't know if one falls, but they're separate cases. When we talk about the two cases that were just talked about, for the Medicare Part B and the sick allowance, and then the 1.6 pension multiplier, is that in the same situation too? We kind of felt that if one goes, kind of they all go, and then it's a domino effect, and that's why we have, because there's a substantial liability of the county if we lose on these kind of decisions, and that's why I want to make sure we're taking every appeal we can. Could you make a comment on, on the 1.6? You know, to me, these are kind of allied together, and they're pretty close. But we have different courts, so we could have different opinions on all three. I mean, one could say, well, yeah, the 1.6 was okay, but then it seems to me they're all pretty similar, or am I mistaken on that kind of analysis, non-lawyer analysis? I guess I'd ask that, please.
Attorney Grady.
Mr. Chairman, two things. First of all, I think this is a very good debate to have when we get to that point, and I think a debate to have in closed session, at least partially, not completely in closed session, but at least partially in closed session, on why or why you might not want to appeal. Some of that should be in public, but some of it should be closed as well. With respect to the supervisor's question, I would say that the two cases that are clearly tied together are the pension multiplier case and the backdrop case that was recently filed, which I didn't talk about, but we recently had a backdrop lawsuit filed over the backdrop modification. Those two cases rise and fall on the same principle. So I think they are very closely tied together. The other case, the Medicare Part B case, is similar but not identical. And so it's not quite the same. And without going into a lot of detail, that's the best I can tell you. It's similar but not identical.
Okay. Anybody
Thanks.
Else? If not, that completes our agenda.